Somewhere around the new year of 2018, I was coaching a CrossFit class and we were doing an open tester. So the workout was 11.6, which was repeated as 12.5. It was actually a really good pick because it got repeated again in the 2018 open as 18.5. And fun fact, that was the only time there's been a three-peat for an open workout. Anyway, the workout was a 7-minute AMRAP, ascending rep scheme of thrusters and chest bar pull-ups. So it's 3 thrusters, 3 chest bars, 6 thrusters, 6 chest bars, 9, 9, 12, 12, etc. And as a coach during a workout like that, if I have coaches listening, I'm sure they can relate to this. There's really not a whole lot for you to do. Like the music's probably turned up, people are sort of amped up and ready to go, and there's not a whole lot of coaching that's going to be taking place. So as a result, you're sort of reduced to cheering. As a coach, I've been called a lot of things, but a good cheerleader is not one of them. So what I'm doing is some data collection. So basically walking around and watching athletes and maybe taking some mental notes so I can help them out. And then after the workout, one of the more competitive athletes came up to me and was like, "Hey coach, got any advice for thrusters? Like every time they came up, I just felt like I couldn't catch my breath during them in the workout." And I was like, "Yeah, I think you got some stuff that I can help you work on." In my head, I was like, "I just watched you do the entire round of 12 chest to bars without breathing once that entire time. Of course, you're going to be out of breath when you go to do your thrusters." So this athlete, they don't need some new progression or fancy protocol. They just need to figure out how to breathe while moving. So if you're someone listening and you want to perform at your best in the endless variety of workouts, that is CrossFit. You have to learn how to effectively breathe in every single movement. If you want to be great, you have to master your breathing in CrossFit. Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Soar Fitness. Soar Fitness is my company, and my platform deliver training content to coaches and athletes like you. The site has educational resources on everything from program design and exercise physiology to skill progressions and movement breakdowns. And in terms of programming, we have our online training program, The Protocol, and I also offer one-on-one remote coaching. It's all at one place, soarfitness.com. And welcome back to my rant on breath ratios. So the outline of today's show. First thing I want to go over is just an explanation as to why breathing is so difficult in Metcons. Like CrossFit uniquely challenges the breath. Why is that the case? Right? I don't think it's as straightforward as many people kind of give respect to, and they just say that you're going hard in workouts, which is true, but I think there's more to it than that. Then we'll dive into what are breath ratios. I'll go over some common examples and ways that you can actually use breath ratios to help elicit your best performance. Three, I'm going to go over three factors that determine breath ratios. So there's a number of different breath ratios that you could use that are viable options for each movement. I want to go over what factors might help determine or help you decide or naturally kind of go into the correct breath ratio. And then four, I want to go over breath ratios in common CrossFit movements. So chest to bar pull-ups, thrusters, double unders, box jump overs, muscle-ups, running, biking, swimming, all of those movements. I want to go over how you can breathe most effectively through breath ratios for each of those movements. Let's get into it. First thing, why is breathing so hard in Metcons? I mean, there's obvious things like, okay, you're using large muscle groups, you're moving loads over long distance at a high speed. So you're creating all this power output that's obviously going to be very metabolically expensive, and you have to support that through respiration, right? You have to breathe off CO2, you have to be able to onboard as much oxygen as possible, right? That exchange of gas that needs to take place for you to have a good performance. Obviously, however, I think there's more things than just what meets the eye at that first initial glance that we might see. A little while ago, I wrote an article called Breathe and Move, The Dual Role of Respiratory Musculature. I'll link to that in the show notes. As always, that's zorfitness.com/podcast/, in this case, 055. So in that article, I basically explain that respiratory musculature is not just responsible for exchanging gas, right? That ventilation that we always think about, of course, that's what breathing is. But for respiratory musculature, especially in CrossFit, there's more than just that. They have a dual role, breathe and move. So I've got two examples, one for inhale, one for exhale, that'll help kind of explain this a little bit more. So let's take the GHD sit up. Most people, when they do the movement, they lay back and they sit up. And as they're sitting up is when they initiate their exhale. So if we think about what muscles are involved to do the actual sit up, the active portion, the concentric portion of the movement, combined with what musculature do you actually use to initiate an exhale, it's the same musculature. So the musculature being used there is being used to both breathe and move, right? It's your abdominal wall that's having to work there. If we take an inspiratory example, so now we have something where it's actively sitting on our rib cage and preventing us from being able to take a breath and be able to expand that rib cage and have air rush into our lungs. So something like a sandbag carry is a great example, right? So many people have issues of breathing and not being able to get good breaths in when they're holding a sandbag because it's compressing their rib cage. It's sitting on, you know, their stomach and their diaphragm isn't able to move freely and they're not able to get air into their body nearly as effectively. So here, think about what musculature is being used to breathe, what muscles are being used to move. Again, they're the exact same ones. It's diaphragm, it's intercostals, it's your scalenes, right? If you have, you know, a barbell on the front rack, it's going to be extremely hard to be able to elevate your first rib and be able to get a lot of expansion, especially through the upper part of your rib cage, if it's literally sitting on your chest and across your delts and your collarbones. It's going to be obviously way more challenging to create space to actually get air into your body. So it's not just about high systemic work rate. It's not just about going hard in the workout. It's not just about combining all these different types of movements. It's also the fact that you're going to have movements that are in direct interference in terms of being able to use your respiratory musculature for the actual movement and be able to use your musculature to actually breathe. And then lastly, I will say that there's going to be times where you just can't breathe in workouts. And I want to get more into this later on. But just understand, if you're doing a max effort squat clean after you did a bunch of bar facing burpees and dumbbell squats like 18.2A, that's going to obviously be a completely unique challenge on your breath as well, because you literally are forced to hold your breath if you want to brace effectively in a very high tension scenario like that. So I think we need to give more respect to breathing in CrossFit. Moving on, rant over. What are breath ratios? So that's obviously what this podcast is supposed to be about, or what I've decided for it to be about. Breath ratios is just simply the number of breaths that you're taking during a given rep of a movement. Let me go over some examples and hopefully I can make this a little bit simpler. I'm going to start with a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio. So something like a thruster would be a great example of this. You initiated inhale on the eccentric, the lowering portion of the lift. You hold for a brief fraction of a second as you change directions, and then as you come up out of the bottom of the squat, you're going to exhale. So it's one full breath cycle for one full rep, right? 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio. The same thing could be true for like a pull-up or a chest bar, right? One breath for one rep is typically the way that it's done. Rowing is another great example of what is typically a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio. So you inhale during the recovery portion, and then during the pull is when you actually exhale. Something with a 1-to-2 breath to rep ratio, in other words, you're doing 2 reps for every 1 breath that you take, might be something with a quicker cycle speed, something like double unders, where you're going to inhale on one jump and then you'll exhale on the next jump. So it'll sound something like this. For a movement like running, you might get as high as like an 8-to-1 breath to rep ratio. So in other words, you're taking 8 steps before you get through a full breath cycle. So you would initiate an inhale or an exhale on an every 4 step. So it'd be like this. Right? So it's, again, it's 8 steps for every single full inhale plus exhale breath cycle that you're taking. So those are the common examples. Again, for most things in CrossFit, you're going to be doing a 1-to-1, or if you get tired, you're probably going to move to something like a 2-to-1, where you're taking double the breaths for that same rep. And that's something that we'll get into in a bit. In my opinion, the easiest place to get started in terms of getting your feet wet with breath ratios is with the cyclical movements, especially cyclical movements where there's lots of like, quote, correct options, right? Where you can kind of fall into a natural pattern and that kind of matches your work rate appropriately. So I gave before the example of a 1-to-8 breath to step ratio for running. I very easily could have said like 1-to-6 or 1-to-4, and each of those could have been correct based on your fatigue level and your fitness level. during a specific workout, or, you know, if you're going up a hill, again, all these things are going to change and be dynamic. There's lots of correct options there, however. So it's, again, even for someone who's relatively novice, it's pretty easy to be like, okay, I'm just going to start to get into a normal, sort of pattern of making sure that I initiate and exhale every time a foot lands. And I can change that based on my fatigue level, etc. You don't need to know the exact count. That's just sort of like my thing. Just understand that, okay, if I want to initiate an exhale, I should think about as a foot lands onto the pavement or the treadmill, I want to initiate an exhale during that time. Again, something like cycling, biking, there's lots of correct options because the cadence is fairly high. There's lots of times that you can, again, initiate and exhale as you're kind of coming around the top, and right around to maybe 1 o'clock in your stroke is when you want to initiate an exhale as you go through the power phase of that stroke. Again, for a lot of people who are, you know, around this fitness space for really any amount of time, we'll do that fairly naturally, especially if they're putting out some decent power. If they're in sort of recovery mode, that might be completely not aligned. And that's perfectly fine at that point because they're not producing a lot of power. But when they're in a higher power output, those will sync up fairly regularly. So cyclical movements like running and biking are a great place to get your feet wet for breath ratios, just because, again, there's so many opportunities to fall into a correct pattern. Other cyclical movements are a little bit more challenging. I mentioned rowing before. Most people row at a 1-to-1 breath to stroke ratio, regardless of fatigue level, regardless of the pace that they're rowing at, regardless of how long they plan on doing the workout for. So for example, a lot of people are like, yeah, I row at 30 strokes per minute, regardless of, again, the demands of the workout. So what that means is you're going to sort of feel like you're suffocating if you're going really hard in the end of a workout, you have high level of fatigue, and you're also rowing at a really hard pace. Yeah, it's going to be really challenging to maintain that 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio. So for a lot of CrossFit athletes, it would also be a really good idea to get familiar and comfortable with a 2-to-1 breath to stroke ratio. So now you're taking 2 breaths for every single stroke of the rower. So in practicality, this would be like you're exhaling sort of onto the screen in the catch, and you're exhaling as you lean back at the very end of your stroke, right? So you're getting 2 full breaths for each stroke of the rower. And as a result, say you're rowing at 30 strokes per minute, you go from doing 30 breaths per minute in a 1-to-1 to 60 breaths per minute in now this 2-to-1. So obviously you have to try to still ventilate fully on each breath, where you're not having these really shallow, pathetic little breaths. but then also it just allows for you to just ventilate so much more rapidly and blow off a lot more CO2 and feel a lot better in the workout and keep your output higher as a result of that. So again, that would be a really smart option for someone who, if you're really tired, it allows you to kind of hop on the rower and start moving at a slower stroke rate at that 2-to-1 or at a really high output at the end of a workout. Something like swimming, again, you've limited breath ratios. So again, this is another cyclical movement. You have plenty of options still, but again, they're limited because you can't breathe when your face is under the water. So your options are, as you turn, like at least in freestyle, as you turn, you want to, you know, grab a breath and inhale every other stroke, every 2, every 3, right? You have options, but they have to be at regular intervals. And the rest of the time, you can exhale fully and continuously during when your face is under the water, which is generally recommended. But then when you turn, you grab a quick inhale, and it's a sharp, fast inhale. So again, a number of options, but it's not as free as something like biking and rowing. So now I want to revisit something that I kind of mentioned earlier, but I want to go over it in more detail. Times when you can and times when you cannot breathe in workouts. So there's going to be times, even if you're the best athlete, the most efficient athlete in the world, where you do not breathe in particular metcons, because that's how you're going to get your best performance. So in other words, let's say there's a workout and has thrusters, but the thrusters are at 50% of your 1 rep max front squat, which would be a pretty darn heavy thruster, especially if you're a strong individual. What that means is that for, again, in this scenario, almost everyone is going to do the thing where they inhale as they're going in the eccentric, the lowering. Right as they get to the bottom, they're going to hold their breath for a fraction of a second. And then as they come out of the hole, they're going to exhale again. Again, there's sort of a natural breaking point in your breath where as you inhale, there's sort of a natural pause for, you know, a fraction of a second as you, before you initiate the exhale. And then the opposite, as you exhale, there's sort of a natural pause for a fraction of a second before you inhale. And during those times is when you want to sort of sync up your high support positions. I actually did an episode on high support positions. That was episode 14, so be sure to check that one out. Basically, the gist of high support positions is that, just as it sounds, you are in a position that allows for high stability. So it's the catch of the front squat and the clean and jerk. It's the dip in the clean and jerk. It's the split in the clean and jerk. It's the recovery, right? For the ring muscle up, it would be like the hang, the dip, the support position. And in between each of those high support positions, there's going to be a transition phase where that position happens relatively quickly. So you go from the high support position of, you know, the power position in the snatch to the catch when you're in the bottom of your overhead squat. Again, those are both high support positions. In between there, when you're actually moving your feet and pulling under the bar, that's not a high support position. So as a result, a lot of times you're going to have to hold your breath as you transition in between those high support positions, especially if you're moving really quickly or under a lot of load. So again, I think a deadlift might be a great example here. So for example, say you stood up a relatively heavy deadlift, like you picked it off the floor, it's up at your hip, you're going to grab a full breath in, you'll go, and you'll hold it after you kind of get below your knees in the deadlift. And then once you're above your knees, you'll exhale again. So it's almost like, you know, imagine if you were like a bird tipping into water as you're doing your deadlift, you're going to hold it as you kind of tip over into the water and you're going to exhale again once you're up above, right? So basically each time the bar descends maybe past mid thigh, or if it's lighter, you know, knee or mid shin, you're going to hold your breath for that period of time and then you'll exhale again afterwards. So there's always this play that happens of, you know, these short breath holds combined with trying to be as relaxed and efficient as you can. And there's this complicated interplay that elite athletes probably do naturally, or just from reps and exposure, they have figured out how to do this most appropriately, but not every athlete does it naturally perfectly. So we need to be able to figure out how to coach this and how to learn this for people who don't do it naturally. Another resource for people listening, episode number 17 of the Fitness Movement was Hold Your Breath. Basically, there's times and workouts, as I alluded to, that you're going to be best designed by holding your breath, whether it's for a fraction of a second, whether it's for a second or 2 seconds or longer than that, right? If you're diving into the pool off the start gate, for example, you're probably going to be holding your breath for at least 2 to 3 seconds, especially if you're someone who's really kind of comfortable and familiar with that. So again, there's opportunities within sport to elicit your best performance where you're holding your breath, which is something that I think gets overlooked quite a bit. Most people are like, yeah, you should be breathing kind of fluidly constantly, which is the case for some movements, again, something like running, but it's certainly not the case for all these different movements, especially when you mash them up and put them into a Metcon together. It's just not how it works. Last thing I'll say here is that one of the things I like to think about is I'm onboarding new athletes who come in to work with me one-on-one is a number of mental models that I use in terms of like a classification system for these athletes. For example, like how powerful versus enduring are they? How good is their upper body strength versus lower body strength? How good is their hinging versus their squatting, their pulling versus their pressing? I could go down a whole number of things. One of the ones that I'll kind of think about and classify in my mind is people who are better at like high turnover, lower tension workouts, or people who are better at high skill or high strength movements and workouts. So let's take two workouts. The first workout is moderate snatches, ring muscle ups, and strict handstand pushups. Our second one is light dumbbell snatches, box jump overs, and burpees, right? The first workout, the ring muscle up, snatch, handstand pushup one, is going to certainly favor an athlete who has higher tension, higher strength, but then also can, you know, take advantage of the fact that they can stop doing the movements, right? They can actually take a rest time and still be successful in the workout. And during that rest time, it allows them to hyperventilate. So it allows them to blow off all the CO2 and then get back to work. So in other words, they don't have to be constantly synced up to the cycle rate with the breath ratio. So it allows for freedom when they can disengage from that breath ratio because they don't have to be constantly doing movements. Versus the other workout, dumbbell snatches, box jump overs, burpees, these are movements that are not as high power output. So it allows you to move rather continuously through that entire thing. As a result, if you have continuous work, that means that ideally, if you want your best performance, you're going to have to be continually synced up to a certain breath ratio. Again, you have options underneath that. But what that means is that you don't have time to stop, hyperventilate, rest, and kind of disengage from that breath ratio and from that particular breath cadence. So again, those are two different types of athletes. An athlete who can figure out, okay, I can produce a lot of power. I can rest a little bit, disengage, and kind of hyperventilate and blow off that CO2 and feel a lot better and get back to work, is much more of like a semifinals level athlete, where the types of events that they see are going to much lend itself to that sort of thing. Whereas we have somebody who's more on the turnover, high work rate, very little rest, but can maintain that for a long period of time. They're much more of an open qualifier style athlete, because those are the types of tests that you'll typically find in those scenarios. So again, that's just another kind of way to think about this in terms of having a mental model on how to think about breath ratios. Next, I want to go over three factors that are going to determine which breath ratio you end up using. The first factor is cycle speed, in other words, time per rep. So movements with a very fast cycle speed, you're typically going to hold to something like a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio. So again, something like a chest bar pull-up, kipping handstand push-ups, if you're someone who's really proficient, right? You're moving through those reps really quickly. Like chest to bars might be like 1.2 to 1.1, maybe even a second flat for elite competitors. And they're going to be able to sustain that for, the better part of a minute. They're just going to keep that 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio the whole time. And their output's high and their breath rate is high. And those two match and mesh really nicely as a result. So first factor is cycle speed, time per rep. The second factor is power output. So if you have a movement that's a really high power output, you want to, or you're going to feel like moving towards a breath ratio that allows you to breathe more often. In other words, a higher breath to rep ratio. So something like a heavy thruster, again, would be a really good example of this, where you're still going to do the thing where you would for a normal thruster. We're going to inhale on the lower, exhale on the raise, but then you'll lock out overhead and you'll grab a whole nother breath cycle. So in other words, you'll, again, inhale, lower, exhale, raise. While you're locked out overhead with the barbell, you'll grab a whole nother breath, and then you'll lower back down again. Again, that's just transferring it from a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio to a 2-to-1 breath to rep ratio allows you to keep that bar moving without dropping it, but it also allows you to get more breaths in because, again, you're at a high power output and there's more demand metabolically. If you still have a really high metabolic demand, but you want to move through these reps quicker, and you can because it's a lighter weight, say it's a 75, 55 pound thruster for males and females, that weight really isn't going to slow a serious competitor down at all, right? So what that means is if you're really messed up, say you just got done with a big set of burpees or really hard rowing interval, you get off, you get to your thruster bar and you immediately start, what you're probably going to end up doing is disengaging what you normally do with a heavier front squat or heavier thruster where you inhale on the lower, you hold and exhale on the raise. What you'll do is you'll probably exhale as you press overhead in your thruster, and then you'll exhale again as you get to the bottom. So you actually create just a little bit of tension in the bottom, and you don't need a ton because it's a light thruster. Exhale on the bottom, exhale at the top, and now you get that 2-to-1. But what that allows for is continuous movement versus pausing in that overhead locked out position. If you're someone who's listening to this and you're like, why would someone lock out overhead in a thruster and hold it there for a second once they're breathing? It doesn't make any sense to me. It sounds really taxing. Number one, you probably don't want a great overhead position, and you should probably watch someone who does. So for example, Mal O'Brien, she won the wall walk thruster event at the 2021 CrossFit Games. You can see in those reps when she's doing her thrusters, she pauses as she's locked out overhead. She might have taken 2 or 3 breaths for each one of those. And you could also see that as her elbow got to end range, it was like working. As soon as she got to end range, you could see it as it was full extension. You could see her tricep almost turn off, where you could see it was just like popped into that fully extended, completely locked out position. And as a result, that's a super efficient, high support position for someone like her. So she can disengage a little bit more, just have her skeletal system sort of support that weight, minimal input from the actual musculature, be able to catch 2-3 breaths and go into the next rep. And that way it kind of potentiates the next rep as well, where you're literally holding the bar at the highest point. So there's all that potential energy kind of stored there versus dropping it and having to clean it as sort of a buy-in to get back to your thruster. Anyway, oftentimes people are like, why is an elite athlete doing that? An elite athlete might not even really be able to articulate why they're doing what they're doing, but it's often the most efficient thing for them, even if you can't necessarily relate to it. Moving on, factor number three is accumulated fatigue. So cycle speed, power output, accumulated fatigue. Accumulated fatigue is just saying like, how tired are you? So let's take open workout 15.5 as an example. It's thrusters and row cows. So say it's towards the end of the workout, you drop your thruster bar, obviously highly fatigued at this point, you're hurting bad, like this is a very metabolic portion of this workout. You drop that bar, likely you're holding a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio up to that point, trying to cycle through those reps as quickly as you could, no pause overhead, and trying to move through those as quickly as possible. You drop that bar, you're probably going to go immediately into a hyperventilation to get your body's like, oh my gosh, I have so much CO2 buildup, right? But you're at the same time, your mind's telling you get back on the rower, immediately start rowing because you want to get that flywheel spinning, start getting the calories underway. So as you do that, you'll probably naturally go into a 2-to-1 breath to stroke ratio where you'll exhale in the catch, you'll exhale in the back of the pool. And as a result, you're going to be holding much closer to 60 breaths per minute, which is obviously going to allow for you to sustain a higher output. So those are the three factors that determine your breath ratio. Number one is cycle speed. Number two is your power output. And number three is your accumulated fatigue. One additional thought, do whatever you can to stay engaged in a workout. You can really only focus on one thing at a time, right? And for most people, they're not proficient enough at the movements to be able to focus on something other than their breathing or like a cue of the movement itself. So what I like to do is try to figure out a way where counting my breaths, which is obviously going to help me stay engaged in the movement, is also counting reps. So this is really easy in like a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio. You just count your breaths and it naturally it's going to end up being the number of reps that you're doing. So I counted 27 breaths and I was doing my chest to bars. I know that I did 27 chest to bars. For example, I will do typically like a 1-to-2 if I'm relatively tired doing double unders. So I will count by twos when I do my jumps. So every time I jump, I'm counting 2, 4, 6, 8, right? Every time I'm initiating an exhale, because that's when I count. For something like wall balls, I'm typically holding a 2-to-1 breath to rep ratio. So I'll exhale on the ball at the bottom of the squat. I'll exhale as the ball impacts the target at the top of the rep. And then I'll count, again, I'm counting by initiating an exhale. So I'll count 1-1 for each of my breaths and then 2-2. So it'll be 1-1, 2-2, 3-3. And again, each time I'm initiating an exhale, I'm just repeating that. And again, it just allows me to count my breaths, but since I'm repeating it, it allows it to sync up correctly. There I can just count, again, the number of breaths that I'm doing, making sure that I'm repeating, and it syncs up with the correct number of reps for that particular movement. Lastly, I want to get into some common movements that we see in CrossFit, gymnastics, and weightlifting movements, breath ratios that are going to be appropriate for these. With gymnastics and weightlifting movements, unlike, again, like I said, with like running or biking where there's just a lot of correct, again, quote, correct options, here there's going to be very limited options because you can only slow down a gymnastics movement, especially like a kipping gymnastics movement, so much without it breaking down. So you can only slow down a kipping toes to bar so much and have it still be a kipping toes to bar and have it actually like work from like a momentum perspective because of gravity. same thing with like bar muscle ups, with ring muscle ups, with, even things like handstand walking, like you only want to slow it down so much because it just doesn't make sense beyond that because of the time under tension, and just the cost and reward. So, that being said, there are limited options for these. So there's things that are, again, kind of quote, correct and incorrect. Let's start with, again, the simple ones that I have been going over: chest to bar, handstand pushup. Typically these are going to be a 1-to-1, something like a handstand pushup. Again, if you're someone who has pretty good muscular endurance and you have relatively high systemic fatigue, it could be where you are going to change this into a 1-to-2 where you pause in the lockout of your handstand pushup for a brief period of time. You grab a full another breath, a full another inhale and exhale, and then you do the normal portion of the movement, typically inhaling on the lower, exhaling on the raise. So you just add another breath on top of that to be able to support more longevity in your movement. Something like the muscle ups. If we take a bar muscle up, technically, I would say there's probably in something like a strict bar muscle up, there's probably really two high support positions. I don't really consider the dip in a bar muscle up one of the key positions. Really, I think of it as like hang and the support position. Because again, for most elite competitors, that's what you're seeing. You're not seeing them really pass through a dip. Yes, there is definitely some elbow flexion that takes place, but it's pretty minor. It's not like a big, significant dip like you see in a ring dip. So in other words, In the kipping version of the bar muscle up, there's really no way to pause in the hang, right? It just destroys your momentum. It's not a viable option to stop and kind of pause. So what you're going to do is the only high support position that is really viable for something like a kipping bar muscle up is the support position. So you're going to basically go from top to top, like a top to top bar muscle up, where each time you get back to the top, especially if you're fatigued, you're going to be able to breathe more freely in that position. And then you're just going to sort of inhale as you're lowering, exhale through the power portion where you're kind of doing like the hip drive press down of the muscle up. With something like the ring muscle up, the lower half of the ring muscle up is going to be very similar in terms of the breath pattern to something like a bar muscle up. Because you're under a lot of tension, you're going to be kind of inhaling as you catch your weight, and you're going to exhale as you get through the dip and press out. With something like a ring muscle up, again, there could be technically three high support positions where you would have opportunities to breathe, especially something like a strict ring muscle up, hang, dip, and support position. Again, for anyone who's at a fairly high level where you've done, strung a number of ring muscle ups together, especially in a workout, we have some fatigue buildup because the rings require so much activation, that's not a viable option to really stop in any of those positions. So you want to almost have this continuous motion that's happening, which is why you see people try to cheat the lockout and try to like pass through the dip quickly and all those things that you typically will see out of like games level athletes. So again, there's very limited options in those types of movements just by the nature of it. Like you want to do the movements and then you want to stop and be able to breathe sort of naturally, especially something like a ring muscle up. Also true for things like chest bar. You don't want to change that. You want to leave it at a 1-to-1 and you want to move through those as rapidly as you can. For something like handstand walking, I think we could probably actually compare this to running. Not the fact that like those are the same skill level, but the fact of how you're thinking about breathing in them. So when you're running, typically I like to tell people like initiate an exhale as a foot impacts the ground. I don't care what foot, just initiate an exhale when a foot impacts the ground. It's the same thing for the handstand walking, obviously with the hands. So maybe each time my right hand touches down, I initiate an exhale, right? So that would sort of be like maybe a 1-to-2 breath to rep ratio, I think you could probably call it. Either way, it's now sustainable, it's predictable. It's something where it's going to allow and encourage your body to, again, create output from that. Bar facing burpees, something like this. Again, a lot of people end up holding their breath or not breathing in the right timing and just destroys their efficiency in something like a bar facing burpee. So what I typically do, what I find works really well for my athletes that I coach is you exhale as you kind of impact the floor with your chest, because obviously that compression is also kind of aiding that exhale, obviously. And then as soon as you kind of pop up or you create a little bit of gap between yourself and the floor is when you inhale. So your rib cage becomes unloaded, you inhale immediately, and then it's when you're kind of jumping over top of the bar, right after you jump, as you're passing over the bar, you initiate a second exhale. And typically, unless you're really fatigued, you don't need to go to a third breath in one of those. Two breaths per rep is often definitely the way to go with those. Something like a burpee box jump over, you might have to add a third breath in just because the cycle rate is a little bit slower. Like if you're really cruising on bar facing burpees, you can do those at 2.8 or 3.0 seconds per rep. With something like a burpee box jump over, you're looking at least another half a second to get through that rep. And if you still try to hold two breaths for each one of those reps that you do, it's just going to be challenging, to be honest, especially if you're at a higher fatigue level. So you often will have to go to getting a third breath throughout that movement, which in practicality could be like you exhale as you jump and then you exhale kind of as you're sweeping your feet back in your burpee or just kind of jumping off the box. You kind of have to play around with it and see what's going to work for you. Now let's move on to weightlifting movements. If we take something like a squat clean versus a power clean, most high-level athletes have a higher squat clean than they do a power clean just because they can get under it, they can use their legs more. There's a number of reasons. They don't have to lift the weight as high, right, before they can actually squat it. However, a lot of those same athletes will opt for a power clean even at a very high percentage in a workout. The reason being, when you get under a squat clean, you're forced to brace for a longer period of time than a power clean. Like a power clean, at the very least, you're already above parallel, so there's a very minimal amount of time that you have to hold your breath during the actual brace of getting out of the hole, so to speak, of that movement. So you catch a lot higher, and as a result, you don't have to brace quite as hard or as long, I should say. Again, so say it's, a workout where it's, a 95% of what they've power cleaned before, they still might opt for power cleans at that weight versus, you know, it's 87% of their 1RM squat clean. They might actually still opt to do that power clean because it's just the amount of bracing that they have to do in terms of total duration is less. Let's take heavy versus light power snatches. So if it's a light power snatch, say it's, you know, less than 30% of your one rep max, you're pretty free in how you go about breathing in that movement. As a result, you probably maybe do a muscle snatch touch and go where you're exhaling as you lock out and turn over in your snatch. And then you're also exhaling again as you're sort of touching the floor in the touch and go of the snatch. Compare that to something that's like a moderate to pretty heavy power snatch would be maybe 70% of your one rep max. Here, you're probably going to be holding your breath during the pull. You'll be holding your breath through the extension and through the turnover. And then once you actually lock out in that sort of quarter overhead squat is when you'll then exhale. You'll likely drop and be doing singles, so you can kind of breathe as you need to between those reps. Or if it's something where you are going touch and go, likely you'll stand it up. You'll either immediately lower into the next rep and kind of rehook and inhale as you're going back down into the eccentric portion because you're relatively unloaded during that time. Or you'll, if you're really tired, but still continuing to move through touch and go reps, you'd hold overhead for a second. You take another full breath cycle, just like you would for a thruster. And then once again, initiate an inhale as you're lowering down to the next rep. I mean, you can do that same thing for almost any movement. Like even if you were really tired and like dumbbell snatches, and from a systemic standpoint, but you're not super fatigued in terms of like being able to actually do the movement, you could hold it overhead, take another full breath, and then continue into the reps. If you take something like a thruster versus a wall ball, again, they're both similar patterns. However, the demands of the movement are very mismatched, right? A thruster is probably a higher power output, even if it's a relatively light thruster, and the cycle speed is quicker. So likely you're going to hold a 1-to-1 breath to rep ratio for a longer period of time than something like a thruster versus a wall ball. A wall ball, the cycle speed is slower. Like you're looking at, you know, instead of like 1.2 to 1.5 seconds a rep, you're looking at like 1.8 to 2.0 seconds a rep from thruster to wall ball. Because it's slowed down, you're much more incentivized to take a second breath during that rep. And as I said before, exhale on the ball in the bottom of your squat, exhale as the ball impacts the target at the top of the rep. So again, that's typically going to be like a 1-to-1 versus a 2-to-1 in the thruster versus a wall ball. Again, even though the patterns are similar. Something like a dumbbell snatch, you're probably going to be exhaling as you pull, inhaling on the lower. With the exception of as you get really tired, you'll likely add a second breath in just like you would for that wall ball where you're exhaling as it's in the kind of impacting the floor on the ground and exhaling again as you lock it out overhead. So if we take that movement and we add a second dumbbell to it, it's now a double dumbbell snatch. Power output just went way up. Systemic tension just went way up as a requirement, right? So a lot of people would think, oh, I should be breathing more in this movement. However, the exact opposite usually happens because it requires so much more tension. It requires more bracing. And more bracing means that you're going to be holding your breath in the bottom portion of the movement. So you lower, you take a big inhale, you hold it in the lowering portion as you change directions with the dumbbells, and then you exhale as you press overhead. And you maintain that 1-to-1 until you're forced to set down the dumbbells. Once you're tired, you set down the dumbbells, you breathe freely, and then you pick it back up. Again, most people would think if it's a higher power output, higher tension is required, you want to breathe more frequently, which would be the case. But for most people, they're not able to sustain the movement while doing that. So they end up holding a 1-to-1 in something like a double dumbbell snatch. So I encourage you to practice breath ratios, play around with them in your training, see what utility they are to you. In my experience, once an athlete is able to quickly identify the breath pattern that's going to be most effective for a new movement, the efficiency of that movement skyrockets, right? So if you're able to quickly identify what breath ratio do I need for this movement, all of a sudden you're at a huge advantage over your competition when novel movements come out. So if you can master breath ratios, you can learn to maximize your performance in workouts. And that is how you master breathing in CrossFit. Hey, it's Ben again. Thanks for listening today. To be completely honest, it's been really rewarding to have people who listen to the show regularly reach out to me, whether they have a question about training or just to say, hey. So if you haven't done that yet, do it. I'm pretty good about getting back to people, and you can feel free to email me, ben@sorefitness.com, or message me on Instagram @sorefitness. And graciously, I've had some people reach out to me and ask how they can support the show. Number one way that you can support the show if you are a regular listener is just by rating the show. Most apps have a platform where you can actually rate it, and on Apple Podcasts, you can write a review as well. This is super helpful in having other coaches and athletes find the podcast, but also just having it grow and for me to continue to want to put out more and more content. Also, I'm going to be posting more full episodes of The Fitness Movement to our YouTube channel. So if you're someone who actually enjoys seeing my face when I talk, you can head over to YouTube and subscribe if you please. And if you're someone who is watching on YouTube, you have the ability to like our videos, but then you can also comment on the video if you have questions about the episode or if you want to suggest a topic for a future episode. And lastly, if you're someone who really does value what we're putting out, I would encourage you to hire a coach. For me, coaching is the bulk of my job, and it's what I believe I do best. So if you're an athlete or a coach looking to up your fitness game, be sure to reach out. You can message me on Instagram at ZorFitness or email me ben@ZorFitness.com. Thanks again for listening today. And as always, stay the course.